All right. Well, thanks, mate. excuse me. Yeah, I'm still a bit croaky. I've been in isolation for a week with COVID, and it's been rather unpleasant. Yeah, I'm Mick. I'm an alcoholic. Some people don't, you know, like labels, shouldn't use labels or whatever else, but that's a label that suits me. The way I drank, the way it affected me, the way it affected my life, you know, alcoholic sums it up. I loved alcohol, absolutely loved it. Not particularly the taste, always the effect. I just chased it. Never during my drinking was it social. It was always with the intention of getting drunk as quick as possible. Sometimes if there was something going on like New Year's, I used to hate New Year's because I'd have to pace myself to try and still be conscious by midnight, and quite often didn't succeed. So yeah, there's many New Year's that I never actually saw, and yeah, not that it's a big drama. Like a lot of people, my story is fairly similar. I grew up at, you know, just an insecure kid, anxious, never really sort of feeling like I fit in, and always trying to be something I'm not. I spent many years, you know, riding around on a motorbike, you know, with a long beard and dark glasses and growling at people. And, you know, it was a good way of keeping people at bay, and, you know, none of them really realizing, you know, I was just a scared little kid behind the mask. Teenage years, I you know, started drinking whenever I could. Not having any money made it difficult, but we're always fairly cunning with the way we do things, and so whenever the opportunity arose, I would drink, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Another label I could apply is addict, I suppose. I used lots of drugs and loved it, but booze was always there. Whether it's, you know, smoking pot or, you know, speed or, you know, whatever else, it was, you know, always with booze. It was a complement to the booze. Booze was always my drug of choice. Mixed up kid, could have done well at school. All my school reports, you know, Michael has the ability to do well if only he would apply himself. And that was the issue. I had no interest in applying myself. I didn't like the way the education system taught. You know, I didn't learn well the way that they taught. And I rebelled with that, and sort of finished high school, and then, you know, it was supposed to be a bit more mature and go on to college and be a bit more self-reliant, and I wasn't. I was, you know, basically stopped going to school, and getting drunk whenever I could. And my father came home one day with some papers for the Navy, and said, have a look. So I had a look and said, why not? Fuck it. Yeah. So I joined the Navy. Yeah. I didn't sort of venture off on a career path and do any research or anything. I just had this paper in front of me why not? So if I went and joined the Navy, and for an alcoholic, it was great. There was a huge drinking culture. It was expected of you to drink. You know, if you you either played sport or you drank. And considering I didn't play sport, well, you know, I drank. And so I spent 6 years in the Navy drinking as much as I could get away with, basically. I worked on helicopters, you know, had to repair helicopters and stuff. So, you know, I'd have to get to work in the morning and be capable of, you know, turning up, basically. So that sort of limited my drinking during the week, and then it was, you know, into it on the weekends. Yeah, after 6 years in the Navy, I got out. I didn't have the limitations on my drinking from that. So it was, you know, drinking daily and within about 12 months of getting out of the Navy, I was a wreck. One morning that the phone rang and I answered it, and there was, you know, this guy said, "Oh, you want the job?" And I said, "Who the fuck's this?" Yeah. And it was some guy that I'd met at a pub the night before, and he was a bikey wannabe, and he'd organised a job for me with Australia Post, riding postie bikes, delivering telegrams, and that was great for 6 weeks until I went home to the old man's place for lunch, and they weren't home, so I had a bottle of dad's beer, and then back to work, big hash joint, and then, you know, went out delivering telegrams, and managed to get hit by a bus, and I end up in hospital and broken ankle, and a few weeks after that, I end up basically at my rock bottom. I'd been to a club in Canberra in Australia on a Friday night, and when that closed, I left there, you know, plaster on my foot, staggering off to find some other bar at, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I climbed over a construction site, and I climbed over a fence because I didn't want to walk around, it was too far, and I fell down the other side and cut my hand on the barbed wire, and the last thing I recall of that was sitting in this bar underneath a car park somewhere, and, you know, just drinking shots of Jack Daniels and dripping blood into an ashtray from wound in my hand. And next thing, I woke up in a friend's house, out in the garage in the back seat of the car with a horse rug over me, and went up with them. In the morning, you know, they went to get milk for breakfast, and I bought beer, and they got on my case, you know, to do something about my drinking. And I said, you know, some people have a problem drinking early in the morning. I don't, you know, so, but they kept on my case. They had a gutful of my behavior, and they kept at me, and finally, to shut them up, I agreed to go to a detox. Very fortunate that at that detox, it was a requirement to also go to AA meetings. So, I went off to my first AA meeting on that Sunday night. That was 1st of April, you know, April Fool's Day, which is rather significant, I think, about my drinking, 1987. And I went to that meeting, and, I heard people's stories about drinking like I did. My idea of an alcoholic was, you know, your normal Hollywood thing of, you know, on a park bench, you know, dressed in a great coat, you know, drinking, you know, cheap wine, you know, with brown paper bag sort of thing. But that wasn't the case at this meeting. There was people there that there was something about them, you know, there was a life to them, you know, there was life in their eyes, you know, and that sort of stuff. And there was a guy there talking about jumping out of a glider and parachuting onto the beaches of Normandy on D-Day and sculling a bottle of rum on the way down. And like, oh, fuck, wow, you know, wow, this is amazing. And here's this guy standing here sober. And it was a few weeks later I realised he wasn't old enough to have been in World War II. And he was just full of shit. But, it takes all sorts, and, you know, whatever gets you through the day. After that meeting and, you know, spending some more time in detox. I spent another 9 days in detox and then left there and went down to the south coast of New South Wales to my drug dealer's place from when I was in the Navy, and spent a weekend partying there, and then decided that I was just heading straight back to where I was. So I left there and went back to Canberra and back to meetings. So, you know, the last time, you know, that I consumed drugs or alcohol or whatever else to escape myself was the 13th of April in 87. So a bit over 35 years. And you know, yeah, it's a long time. It hasn't stopped me being crazy. It hasn't stopped me wanting to kill people. It hasn't stopped me being depressed or anxious. All it's given me is an ability to, you know, to be able to live the life that I lead, and with all the ups and downs. I'm no longer entitled to chemical peace of mind. Heard a mate say that at a meeting many years ago, and it just rang true. In early recovery, used to roar around on a motorbike, and I'd always turn up to the meeting late so people could hear me coming. You know, that sort of thing. just big ego. I kept going to meetings and ended up good mates with this Maori woman in Canberra, and she was mad as a cut snake. But, we were good mates. We still are good mates. We'd go off to meetings on the bike, or, you know, might just jump on the bike and go down the coast for a weekend or something, and, you know, we're free to do whatever we wanted. I wasn't working at the time. The first money I had after getting into recovery was, you know, people from a meeting, a couple of guys that had a maintenance business, and they had me stripping wallpaper. Not a great deal of fun, but you know, it was a bit of cash, and it was the start of me getting back to being a productive member of society. And there's been lots of ups and downs on the way. I moved into a group house in Canberra, and another woman that moved in there, you know, we ended up getting on quite well, ended up in a relationship and moved into a house together, and ended up getting married and all the rest of that. And end up with two kids, and then political dramas, and you know, which meant, you know, I'd lost the job I had, and so we packed up, two cars, two kids, and a trailer on the back, loaded up with our, you know, lively possessions, and moved from Canberra, across Bass Strait to Tasmania, and we've been here all that time. I rang up to go to a meeting and find out where a meeting was in Hobart one time. There's this guy, very posh, British upper class accent, telling me where the meetings were, and just my arrogance and ego just instantly took a disliking to him. So I didn't go to a meeting for about 6 years, and through work and whatever else, and not dealing with stuff, I end up with massive resentment and depression and suicidal and homicidal. I wanted to kill this guy. And I ended up getting back to a meeting, and it was in that meeting I was sitting there, woe is me, all the self-piteous bullshit that we go on with. And there's a woman there sharing about her partner that had shot himself the night before and committed suicide. And, and it just, it came, you know, hit me like a ton of bricks, that sort of thing that, you know, I often hear in meetings, you know, something, I'm so caught up on my own self-obsessed stuff about what's going on with me, and that there's other people getting on with life and dealing with, you know, tragedies. And got me back to meetings in Tasmania. And so, yeah, all the way along, I've always struggled with the idea of a God or a higher power. It just doesn't make sense to me at all. It's just, there's no logic to it. I'm a very logical person, and there's no logic to it, and it doesn't make sense. And I tried, you know, my first higher power was a bus. You know, I got hit by a bus that got me to a rock bottom, that got me to meetings. So, you know, my first higher power was a bus. I decided after a while that praying to a bus didn't make much sense. So, gave up on that one. And yeah, I've had different iterations of a higher power over the years because, you know, that I was told that's what I had to do, and I didn't want to drink. Until a few years ago, I decided that I didn't need a higher power. Over 30 years sober without a higher power, I don't need to get one now. So, getting along to, you know, a few meetings and less meetings, and then COVID hit, and the meeting that I was going to closed. And so, yeah, I was looking for resources online, found an AA Beyond Belief Facebook page and joined that, and then on there found out about secular AA. I didn't know it existed. I knew what secular meant, but I didn't know that there was any such thing as secular AA or anything else. And I discovered online Zoom meetings, and it's been absolutely brilliant. It's I've come home. There's, you know, people, you know, with the same sort of mindset that I've got about recovery, about life. And, you know, you don't have to do the textbook recovery, you know, as it's written with every word and you know, all the rest of that. I don't recommend, you know, to people to, you know, do recovery the way I've done over the years. It has its, you know, pitfalls and whatever else, but, you know, it's my recovery. And, I've done it without a higher power, without religiously working, you know, the 12 steps of AA. You know, I do, you know, self-assessment of stuff, see where I'm sitting, how things are going, what's going on, do I need to change behaviours in this area and whatever? Sometimes I do okay with that. Other times I fail, but you know, that's life. And I met some amazing people in these Zoom rooms. The other week I went to Melbourne. There's an AA conference over there, and there was a secular meeting, the first secular meeting for a AA convention in Australia. So, you know, I just figured, you know, I've got to be there. So I went over to that and met a few people that, you know, I knew from Zoom meetings, and it was great to, you know, actually meet up with people in person. I didn't bother doing any other meetings while I was there. And then flew back. And got back on Saturday night, was crook, and, you know, tested positive for COVID the next day. So I don't know if I gave it to anyone else over there. Hopefully not. But, you hear it all the time. I'd be dead if it wasn't for AA and all that sort of stuff, you know. But, you know, the way I drank and the way I was going, if I hadn't stopped drinking and, got to AA and got, you know, and allowed people to, you know, to help me over the years, I'd, if I had continued drinking, I have no doubt that I'd, you know, I'd be dead now. If it wasn't as a direct result of alcohol, you'd be a motorbike accident, riding drunk, or taking my own life, or whatever. I have no doubt that I wouldn't be here if I hadn't found recovery. And I met some amazing people, love them to bits. Some really wonderful people in these rooms, and it's been great. And thanks for pointing me at this meeting, and then getting collared to speak about my self-obsessed career over the last 35 years. But it's really great to be here. Thanks.